This hour of the Jason Brand Show is brought to you by American Crawl Space and Pest Services. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Darren, push that button.
What's trending? Follow up.
Aw, more bad news for Michael Avenatti. More bad news for his pawn, Stormy Daniels. Now, we had the story a few days ago where Stormy Daniels told, I believe it was the Daily Beast, that, hey, I didn't even want to sue the president for defamation, and I told Michael Avenatti that, but he did it anyway, which is, of course, completely unethical, by the way. Acting on your own, acting against the wishes of your client, but that's what she said. And she ended up losing that lawsuit, and now we know how much it's going to cost her. It's going to cost her, or really, it's going to cost the dopes who decided to donate to her GoFundMe campaigns. It's going to cost them $293,000 in legal fees that they now owe to President Trump's team. They now owe $293,000 because they pushed forward a silly, disastrous lawsuit that they had to have known they were going to lose, because defamation cases are incredibly difficult to win, especially when you're already a public figure who's controversial. In fact, Joe Arpaio is trying to do that. We're going to talk about that later in this hour. They decided to move forward anyway because Michael Avenatti knew that this wasn't really about winning in court. This was about a pylon on the president. At the time, he thought he was a actual candidate, potential candidate for the presidency. He actually thought he had a shot. And he wanted to be seen as the villain to Donald Trump, which makes him the hero to progressives. Because he was of this position that, you know what, Trump plays tough, I'm going to play tougher. I'm going to go on CNN 24/7, which, by the way, I haven't seen much coverage of this story or any of the stories that are anti-Avenatti on CNN because they've put so much money into promoting him, money in the form of airtime. He's out now $293,000, which he's not going to pay for. It's going to come out of one of these legal defense funds. He then goes on a tweet storm afterwards, though weirdly he deleted a whole bunch of tweets, or at least two of them that I saw. He said, Charles Harder, who's the lawyer for President Trump, Charles Harder and Trump deserve each other because they're both dishonest. He then goes on to say, if Stormy has to pay $300,000 to Trump in the defamation case, which will never hold up on appeal, and Trump has to pay Stormy $1.5 million in the non-disclosure agreement case, how is this a Trump win? It's a Trump win because he won in court and you lost. That's how it's a Trump win. I mean, it's really that simple. I love how you try to spin a loss into a win for you. He's so pathetic. And finally, people are starting to realize on the left how pathetic he actually is. Because on the right, we've always known that he's a loser. We've always known what it is he's doing. But he got some fan base on the left. And now you combine this, you combine the losing the defamation case, you combine it with the alleged assault against a woman, all of a sudden he's got no fans. Although, did you see that? I think it was People Magazine. So People Magazine did their Sexiest People Alive, and I think Michael B. Jordan was on the cover. He had a big spread, at least, in it, because he's got amazing abs, and I hate him for that. They also named Michael Avenatti as one of the sexiest people alive, which is disgusting. He looks like a creepy porn lawyer. It's not just a name.
He looks like a possum.
Yes, he kind of does. I'll give you that. Everyone, or a turtle, maybe. It depends on the photo. I've seen some photos where he looks like a turtle. I'm going to go with a turtle possum. Can we just combine the two and make it work? Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So I've been following with some interest this fight between neighbors in Mukilteo and a developer there, where the developer's been trying to build a whole bunch of homes on a lot of land, 17 acres, that's right now, you know, it's kind of serene. It's got a bunch of trees and brush, and it's a nice little spot of nature. But they want to come in there. They want to log and put up 112 homes. And they've been fighting this for the last 13 years because the neighborhood has been like, we don't want it here. We don't like the noise that it's going to cause. We don't like the environmental damage you're going to do. And just last week, when a construction crew showed up to start getting the work done, folks there, neighbors there, blocked the equipment with their cars. And when King 5 went down, like, hey, Julie, Meg G, what are you going to do, neighbor? She didn't want to talk to them.
I was not comfortable with that, and I would not I'm not going to give away what our plans are or my plans are.
Ooh, so secretive. her plans included putting a car in front of there and then hoping a judge would side with them. So they filed this lawsuit again, or they filed this temporary restraining order that was originally granted by the judge who wanted to get more information on it. And she got more information and she ruled the case on the side of the developer. So they're now siding with Frognall Estates. They're in the right. They can move forward with this. You can't get in the way. You can't block it anymore. One of the concerns coming from some of the people in the neighborhood was like, hey, you know, by doing this development here, you're going to increase the risk of a dangerous landslide. And Snohomish County is like, there's some danger, but it's incredibly minimal. They greenlit this project a long time ago. So now it seems like it's going to move forward unless they try to block it even more. And that's kind of on you. We got an email from someone who lives in this neighborhood who was trying to explain their position. I get your position, but with respect, you don't own the land. You don't get to decide. You tried to fight it in court, and you guys lost, and now it's time to move on. No one likes big construction projects in their neighborhood. No one likes it. But you know what? We're a growing region. Mukilteo is a growing city. And if you don't like that being done with the land, you should have spent, over the course of the last 13 years, a little bit more time raising money and trying to buy the land back from this Frognall Estates company. But you didn't, and you lost, and it's time to move on, which is what we're going to do right now. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
So yesterday I told you that state representative, the Republican from Ellensburg, Matt Manweller, was not happy with the Seattle Times because they wanted him to immediately resign. Now, I should have said immediately announce his plans to resign. I talked with one of the writers of the piece, or the writer of the piece, Melissa Santos, over at the Times on the editorial board, and she pointed out that there's way more nuance to the story. And I got it wrong. I said they want him to immediately resign. I should have said they wanted him to immediately announce his plans to resign. And there's a distinction there that is worth correcting. But then, as we started to talk about the story a little bit, and as she was tweeting about the story, it got a little weird. Because for starters, and I think a lot of where this weirdness is coming from is that both sides are talking about two slightly different things. But then Manweller did something that I think was inappropriate and mean-spirited, and so now I'm kind of upset with him. So this is how it went. He said before getting reelected that if he does in fact get reelected, he's going to resign. He's been hit with a whole bunch of different claims of sexual misconduct, which he 100% denies. He lost his job as a professor, which, by the way, he's suing over. But 3 weeks until Election Day, when the latest bit of controversy came out, he was like, okay, I'm getting pressure to step down. I will step down. But everyone has this general agreement that obviously there's no time to run another candidate. There's no time to get someone else in the race on the ballot. So here's what we need to do. And this was the pitch that was made to his constituents over in Ellensburg, which is, hey, vote for me. You keep a Republican in office. I will step down at the end of my term and we'll just replace me with someone else who's definitely going to be a Republican because the county leadership gets to choose the next person. So he runs with that. He overwhelmingly wins. He won by something like 22 points. But now it's December 12th and he hasn't resigned or sent a letter saying he'd officially resign. So he tells me, and we printed this yesterday, and we talked about this yesterday, that the Seattle Times is acting like a jilted prom queen on dance night. And that he has, in fact, communicated to the county leaders that he plans on serving out his term. But then separately, he told me he didn't tell them the specific date of December 20th when he's supposed to put in this letter. And all of that seemed to be factually accurate as far as I can tell. And I've spoken to a number of people. But Melissa Santos at the Times editorial board said he hasn't told the county leaders about the date, which is, again, is true. And I think is technically what Manweller said happened. I think he is simply saying, hey, I told them I was going to resign, but I was going to finish my term. I think that that is true based on my conversations with some folks. But then he ends up insulting Santos in a text. Melissa sends him a text, getting a little bit aggressive, I suppose, in the screenshots he sent out. But I would be just as aggressive, I think, if I felt I was being lied to. This is what she texted him. And this is the only portion that she screenshot on her Twitter feed. Nice try, but I talked to at least a dozen people for that piece. She's referring to her own piece. All of whom were unclear on your plans. You should probably recall that I do my homework. And I think that is a reference to some spat the two got into, or Manweller apparently got into in the past. But this is how Manuela responds, which is wholly inappropriate, even if you think that Melissa Santos was being aggressive. But again, I'm siding with her on this. Her aggression was warranted there. She says, ah, the prom queen speaketh. Why would you say that in a text to a reporter that's covering a story that is a valid story, even if you think that they're getting some of the facts wrong or maybe aren't treating you right? And there is a bias, I think, against Manuela. Part of the bias is because he's been accused of multiple cases of sexual misconduct. So, I mean, you're going to build that kind of bias. But when you are being accused of misconduct with younger women, including former students or students of yours at the time, why would you insult a female journalist with the term prom queen? Like she's just storming around getting upset that she didn't get her way. I don't know why that's appropriate. And I don't know what he's doing. I get that he's upset with this. And maybe I would be upset the same way if I was in a similar case than he was. Maybe. But it just, am I wrong? Doesn't that just seem wildly inappropriate?
It was avoidable for sure.
It's definitely avoidable. He didn't have to respond at all. And to be fair, I haven't seen the whole string of text, but I can't imagine whatever else she said and he said in these strings of text would justify a state lawmaker calling a reporter a prom queen, because then it's a clear reference to the statement he gave to us, which is they're like a jilted prom queen on day. It just seems inappropriate, and it's definitely unnecessary. But I'd love to hear from you guys. 1-800-465-8770. It's the number to tax resolution hotline. I'm just kind of curious whether you think his response here was appropriate. I do think that they're talking past each other and talking about two different things, and I think both sides are valid in what they're saying. It's just, I don't know. I'm feeling like Matt Manweller is being a little too dismissive, and I think it's inappropriate. 1-800-465-8770. I'd love to hear from you guys. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Democrats met with the president at the White House yesterday to talk about border security and a budget deal to avert a partial government shutdown. But as you heard in the last hour, it didn't go so well. Helping us figure it all out is our good friend Rachel Sutherland from Fox News Radio. Rachel, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Jason. Yeah, that was quite a scene in the Oval Office yesterday. I almost couldn't believe what we were seeing. I think Vice President Mike Pence couldn't believe it either. He was a stone statue the entire time.
He literally didn't move an inch for a good portion of that sort of back and forth.
I'm not sure it wasn't Madame Tussaud's work in there. he just looked like he wanted to be anywhere else. But and maybe he was praying. I'm not sure. But there was a Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, the president all gathered together. And not really happy about being there. As the cameras rolled, they bickered about the government shutdown that could be coming. The government with a heart two sizes too small this Christmas, it appears, if they can't come to an agreement. You have the president wanting the $5 billion in border wall funding. And the Senate, we know, is willing to cough up $1.6 billion for security measures. Not necessarily a wall, but fencing and other security measures along the southern border. House Speaker Paul Ryan has still not taken up the $5 billion package, not sure of the headcount there. But even if it got out of the House, it probably won't get out of the Senate because they need there's a legislative filibuster. There needs to be 60 yay votes, and there's only 51 Republicans. So there you have it. It doesn't look like there's going to be any kind of agreement, and the deadline is December 21st at 11:59:59.
What are the actual sticking points at this junction?
It all comes down to Homeland Security funding and the president's border wall. I believe they were able to get the Farm Bill passed. So the other things that were on the agenda have been, by and large, resolved. It remains that the president wants this money because this is kind of his last stand. When Democrats come in control of the House, that come in the 116th Congress in January, they're not going to be in the mood to negotiate with the president on $5 billion of border wall funding, if at all. Now, they do want a fix for the DACA recipients, people who are brought here illegally by their parents. They want that, so there's a possibility that there could be some kind of an agreement. But I can't imagine that it'll be at the level that the president wants to fund his wall. So right now, while he still has control of the House, while Republicans are still in control, he's trying to get that money. But the troubles getting it through the Senate.
It is, and the president is in an interesting position here because he made the point yesterday that, hey, I'm willing to take the heat for a partial government shutdown because it's over immigration and national security, and I'm going to win that. That's his position. And I think there's some validity to the point of, you know, immigration reform, whether we're talking about security or not, generally does play better for Republicans because there are a lot of independents who side with wanting to do something. But at the same time, government shutdowns, partial or not, tend to backfire on the president who's in charge when it happens.
Right. It could. But then again, maybe not for President Trump, because his supporters, you know, they're kind of diehard. And I don't have any polling, but I've seen a lot on social media that's like, yeah, go ahead and shut the government down. Remember, his supporters want to drain the swamp. Yeah. And they would love to stick it to the swamp. The swamp being government workers who, unless they're essential personnel, would be furloughed. So, and that would mean that eventually they're going to get paid. Remember earlier in the year, Jason, there was a shutdown on January 20th, and that lasted 3 days. It was a partial government shutdown. It was over the same kind of things. It was over immigration. And it reopened after 3 days. And then there was just this teeny lapse in funding in February. Most of us slept through it. It was 9 hours long. And then Congress is able to pass a longer spending bill. But if you'll remember at the time, the president said he was never going to sign anything like that again. He didn't like it. There's too much spending on social programs, things like that. So now he's really digging in his heels. I don't know. I mean, what exactly will happen here?
But what does a partial government shutdown actually mean? What does that encompass?
Right. What it means is that essential personnel report to work, like your TSA agents at the airport. They're not going to pull them off the job. And the FBI and folks that are absolutely 100% necessary, they show up. The ones who are, you know, they're pushing the paper and things like that, they go home and they stay there until it's over and they're furloughed. And that means they'll get paid later. National parks will be closed. I actually have a call in, Jason, to the folks who run the National Christmas Tree. I called the National Park Service and they referred me over to an official with the White House, because I guess that's their jam, the National Christmas Tree, because I want to know if it's going to be turned off.
Yeah.
If it were the Park Service, yes, absolutely, it would be.
Interesting. Well, we'll find out how this all ends up. What I love is when you get that note and you're a government worker that says, yeah, we're furloughing you because you're not essential. That's going to do some wonders for morale. I can't wait to get one of those messages.
Yeah, really.
I've been talking with Rachel Sutherland from Fox News Radio. For more on this, of course, check out foxnews.com. Well, by the way, we got until the 21st, until midnight?
That's right. 21st, 11:59:59. So right at the stroke of midnight. Yeah.
Oh, at that point, I will be well on my way to London. So I'm going to leave you guys to deal with it all.
You're such a globetrotter.
You're damn right, because I want to avoid all these budget strikes. Again, Rachel Sutherland, thank you so much for stopping by this morning. Appreciate it. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. The number is 1-800-465-8770. Do you support a partial government shutdown if it's over the topic of immigration reform, and in this case, really getting a border wall? So it's about security, border security. Do you think this is going to be a winning issue for the president? I'd love to hear from you. Send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send us an email, you can head on over to KTH.com and click on the inbox. You can send us your note there as well. Look forward to hearing from all of you. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back on the Jason Rand Show, it's time for the Big Local. Ben Shapiro will go to Gonzaga, a very tragic story out of Auburn, but some good news for Kent. You're listening to The Big Local, brought to you by Tulalip Resort Casino.
Bellingham, Bellevue, Shoreline, Tacoma.
This is The Big Local on The Jason Rand Show.
Olympia, Everett, Mercer Island.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
With the media being so hyper-focused on the city of Seattle, I'm so grateful to Tulalip Resort Casino for letting me do a segment called The Big Local, where we get to focus on you, the communities you actually live in, and we get to completely ignore the city of Seattle. And this morning, we start at Gonzaga. Ben Shapiro, as it turns out, is going to give a speech at Gonzaga, though the details are a little bit murky. The Young Americas Foundation, YAF, they're the ones who handle Ben Shapiro's speeches. They're the ones who handle all of the requests, because he's the number one most requested speaker at a college campus. They just announced yesterday a whole series of colleges he's going to speak to as part of his tour over the course of the next semester for colleges. And look at that. Gonzaga's on the list. Now, the date is TBD. How they're going to do it is TBD. Because you'll recall, last week we brought you the story with Ben that he was barred from speaking on Gonzaga's campus because they basically took a position that if he comes here, progressive students will protest and they'll feel bad. And they can't handle feeling bad. And they might do things like they are. And so they said, hey, we can't have you here. Now, they have the right to do that because Gonzaga is, of course, a private university. But, of course, it's still wrong. In fact, not allowing some speakers on campus can sometimes be deemed a violation of the First Amendment, depending on the school that we're talking about.
The idea being that a bunch of people don't like me, so they show up at my speeches and they yell at me. And so we can't have me because we don't want the people who are yelling at me, which is basic violation of First Amendment principles. Gonzaga is a private school, obviously, so that changes the math a little bit. They can do what they want.
But it doesn't change the math much when we're talking about the principles here. When we're talking about this tactic, because what we've just done, if you allow this to happen, understand you've weaponized the heckler's veto. Meaning you've basically told college students on these campuses who don't want to hear any opinions that they disagree with, that all you have to do is threaten to protest, threaten to get out of hand, and we're just going to cancel the speech altogether. That's a dangerous message. That's an absolute dangerous message. And as Ben says, any sort of potential violence at Gonzaga, that's a reflection of the university, not a reflection of Ben.
I've spoken at probably 45 universities in the last 3 years. The number where we've had any serious or significant security issue, like where people actually showed up and were dangerous, I can name them off the top of my head. It was Cal State LA. It was University of Berkeley. It was University of Utah, University of Wisconsin, Penn State. So probably five out of a total 40, 45, where there was enough of a serious security issue that we were worried in any real way. When it comes to a university like Gonzaga, isn't that more of a referendum on their student body? Like if you're so afraid of your own student body, that you're afraid that they're going to start burning things, smashing things, screaming terrible, offensive, awful things. Isn't that your fault? I mean, you're the university. I'm just showing up.
So we'll see what ends up happening. I know that the people who like Ben Shapiro, who listen to him every night on the station at 6 o'clock, y'all aren't violent. The conservatives at Gonzaga, they're not violent. They might get violent if he says Gonzaga again, though, right?
What's wrong with that?
It's Gonzaga.
Yeah.
You can't say Gonzaga.
You're right.
I'm just saying.
But I think nothing to get violent about.
I think they might get violent. I'll send him a note and just be like, hey, FYI, it's Gonzaga, not Gonzaga. I know they're very particular about that, which makes sense.
Well, hopefully they can keep their fists to themselves.
They won't. I don't know if they can. Meanwhile, in Auburn, we actually have a really sad story. There's the family of a missing Auburn man who ended up being found dead in the trunk of his car last week. They are coming forward and asking for community members to help them. If you have any information about what happened to Hector Galeno, they're asking that you come forward. His sister, Monica, says he brought out the absolute best in you. Here she is talking with Lindsay Sheldon over at Cairo 7.
He really just had such a way of like bringing out who you really are. Not even your best self or your worst self, just who you really are.
And it's not like he goes missing all that often where they're wondering where he is and then a couple days he shows up and says, oh no, I was just on a bender or something. The second that they found out he was missing, Monica was like, oh, this is not going to end well.
I instantly knew something was wrong. And I instantly knew that it was not good.
So Lindsay Sheldon reports police are still investigating what led to his death, but they have said that his car was seen entering a parking lot of Lakewood Hills Community Center around noon of last Monday. They believe an unknown person drove his car there with his body inside. They parked it and then they left. Police have not released a cause of death yet, but obviously they are asking for the help. So if anyone has any help whatsoever, please immediately call authorities and check out Cairo7.com for more information on this story. We go from, because I don't want to end the Big Local on bad news, so we're going to pivot to some good news, I suppose. At least for folks living in Kent. Dick's Drive-In is finally going to give South Sounders a place to go for probably, I would argue, the best burgers that you can get in the region are from Dick's. That's my favorite burger place. I like Burger Master. What else do I like? We've talked about this before. Locally.
8 ounce burger.
You like 8 ounce
burger. Yeah, I like Unita Burger a lot.
Unita Burger is good. There's lots of good burgers. I like Dick's the most because it provides what you want, which is a cheap, satisfying meal. Now, when I go there, I get the I get a hamburger with a little bit of ketchup on it, their regular one. And I hate ketchup. I love the way it tastes at Dick's. I don't know why. So at 10 a.m. this morning, it's officially opened on 24220 Pacific Highway South in Kent. They're going to have a big to-do there. Bands from Thomas Jefferson and Kennedy Catholic High Schools are going to be there. So probably skip that stuff because it's not going to be. No, I'm kidding. You should totally. I'm just saying you couldn't bring out Macklemore or something. You couldn't get even there. What are they going cheap? They couldn't get an actual artist. What about Duke Evers? They should have brought them out. No, go see Thomas Jefferson, Kennedy Catholic High Schools. Bagpipes from King County Firefighters. And they even have a pop-up swag store that will be there to sell you stuff with Dick's names on it, like banners and stickers and hats and T-shirts.
They do have some cool shirts.
They actually do. Jasmine Donovan, she's the executive vice president of Dick's Drive-In. She's the granddaughter of Dick Spady, who, of course, founded it. She said, "We're so excited to open for our fans in South King County. We know it's been a long wait, and we thank you for your patience. We also want to thank everyone in the city of Kent for all their hard work, blah, 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 blah." So this is the 7th restaurant to open from Dick's, and just the 2nd one outside of the city we don't talk about in this segment. Kent was chosen after the South won an online vote where they asked, hey, where should we open our next restaurant? They give you a whole bunch of options. You decided that it should be in the South Sound. This happened after the 2011 vote went to the North Sound where Edmonds got it, which I didn't know there was one in Edmonds. I was in Lake City not long ago, and I realized, oh, there's one in Lake. I didn't realize that. So go there. You're going to be really happy. I'll say this, though. Because I can't just do a good story, you know that. I can't just deliver good news. If you're super excited that there's a Dick's opening there to the point where maybe you took today off just so you can get in line and be the first to taste one of their admittedly brilliantly tasting burgers, you should probably go to my sponsor, Evolve180WeightLoss.com. I'm just throwing that out there. Like, if your whole life is now about getting that burger first before anyone else, we're like, hey, boss, I got to take today off. Oh, what's going on? I need a person today. Oh, is everything okay? Yeah, I just didn't you hear Dick's is opening in Kent? Like, probably go to Evolve180WeightLoss.com. They'll help you manage through all of that because they've helped me manage through it. And I'm no longer craving Dick's burgers even as I'm talking about it. Yeah, they're good. I can have one from time to time. But I'm on a goal. I've got a goal. I'm on a mission. I'm on a plan. Evolve180WeightLoss is helping me, so I'm going to skip on this. But I will say this, Saul Spady, who is the grandson of Dick Spady, he had a show over the weekend, this past weekend. He's going to come back to KTTH on Saturday from 2 to 4 to do another Saul Spady show. Did he finally bring Dick's the way that he promised he would?
He did.
This is the first time ever. I love Saul. He's a friend of mine. When he tells you he's going to bring you food, he never brings you food. And he, from time to time, I say, oh, you know, if only we met after 10:30 a.m. It's too early for Dick's. Because they don't open until 10:30 usually, in this case at 10. He always uses that as an excuse. And then I gave a speech at Seattle University in their conservative club. And the week prior, Saul showed up for a sort of a town hall style event. And he promised to bring them Dick's. You know what he brought them? Stickers. Can't eat a sticker. Got a whole bunch of college kids who are hungry for Dick's burgers. There's literally a Dick's 5 blocks away from SU, and he couldn't bring them. So shame on you, Saul, who never brings us food, but I'm glad he brought you food over the weekend. There you go. Dick's is open now in Kent. If you're excited about that, 1-800-465-877 if you want to send us a text message about your excitement, or, again, Evolve180WeightLoss.com if you want to tell them about your unhealthy excitement about Dick's. It's the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Former Sheriff Joe Arpaio is suing a whole bunch of media figures and companies for defamation, false light, and interference with business relations all over their coverage of his failed Senate primary campaign in Arizona. Now, the lawsuit was just filed this week. I think it was Monday afternoon. And it lists CNN President Jeff Zucker and host Chris Cuomo and CNN itself. It lists Huffington Post political reporter Kevin Robillard and the HuffPo itself, and Rolling Stone's Tessa Stewart and the magazine itself as the named defendants. Now, he's asking for $300 million, and he's absolutely right to be mad with some of this coverage. $300 million is absolutely nuts. He's not going to get that. In fact, he's probably going to lose this case, because the truth is, when we're talking about defamation, for the most part, it's very difficult to prove, especially when you're a controversial figure where people already either love you or hate you. It's going to be hard to prove damages, because he's going to have to say, hey, this defamation got person X to hate me. Because you're going to have to prove that person X didn't hate them before, and they only hated them as a result of this coverage. And there's no one really out there, especially in Arizona, who's very familiar with Jeff Arpaio, who's kind of on the fence, or like, oh, I'm a big fan of his. Wait, what? You said this on CNN? Oh, well, now I'm not going to vote for him. I hate him. Like, I just think that that's going to be really difficult for them to prove. And the lawsuit cites a whole bunch of stuff. They went on CNN. They say, hey, January 10th of this year, you said something completely false on air.
Controversial former Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio, convicted felon, then pardoned, now jumping back into politics after being pardoned by the president. Arpaio is running for the Senate seat being vacated by Jeff Flake.
Now, what was wrong there? He's not a convicted felon. He's not a convicted felon. He was convicted of contempt of court, and that's a misdemeanor. That's not a felony. So he's not a convicted felon. And the lawsuit says, as of today, CNN broadcast is still available through the website. And no efforts have been taken by CNN or Chris Cuomo to correct the false statement. And they're right. Where did we find it? We found it on the website. That's how we found that clip. In the Huffington Post, the reporters there, or the reporter, said Arpaio had been, quote, sent to prison for contempt of court. Only that didn't happen. He was actually pardoned before serving any time. Rolling Stone called him an ex-felon, which, again, not true. They at least issued a correction. They issued a correction. So they're definitely going to be off the hook. Because all they have to say is, look, these were just mistakes. These were simple mistakes. And they're not meaningful mistakes. Calling someone a convicted felon when they were convicted of a misdemeanor, when we're talking about Joe Arpaio, didn't really damage him. The damage was already done before we even talked about it. Someone saying that he was sent to prison for contempt of court when he was pardoned before that doesn't substantially change someone's viewpoint on this. No one was going to say, hey, man, if he was pardoned before being sent to prison, I was going to vote for him. But now that he was sent to prison before the pardon, I'm definitely against him. Like, you're not going to be able to prove that. At the same time, I want to use the story to highlight two things. Number one, highlight the importance of the media being fair and honest. And we know, in large part, depending on the story, the media overwhelmingly is not fair and honest. So I'm not going to shed a tear over the fact that they're getting called out for this. Because while I don't necessarily think it's nefarious, I think it's just sloppy. Chris Cuomo is an idiot. If anyone has ever seen a second of his new primetime show, you'll realize this is the biggest dope, I think, on TV. And he makes weird facial expressions when he's talking to the camera. It's worse than Stephanie Ruhle, who I thought was the worst. She's the snootiest. He's the dumbest, I think. Don Lemon is a close second on CNN. So I don't know if this was with nefarious intent. I think there was bias at work here that made an error like this easier. But I'm not going to shed a tear over this, because there are lots of people who just flat out lie and present it as news when it's really just their opinion. But number two, this is more for you guys at home. Now, I know you know CNN is not necessarily a trusted news source. I know that you don't look at what's going on with reporting in the New York Times and say, okay, this is definitely all factual. I get that. I get that you know that. But a lot of you can sometimes get lazy, because I sometimes get lazy, in leading on certain sources without fact-checking something. We get into this groove where we say, okay, this person, this reporter, this magazine, this radio station, this newspaper, whatever it is, I like what they say, and so I'm not going to check to make sure what they said is accurate. And that's a problem. That's a problem for Republicans. That's a problem for Democrats. Because there are bad reporters out there on both sides of issues, on both sides of the aisle. I always say fact check everything, because I'm not going to get everything right 100% of the time. Sometimes I make a mistake, and I want you guys to call me out on it. They called me out yesterday when I said the Seattle Times wanted Matt Manweller to immediately resign, when they actually said we want Manweller to immediately submit his plan for resignation, his timeline for resignation. There's not a huge difference between the two, but there is a nuance difference, and I need to be as open and honest about my mistakes as possible. So I totally own that. Lots of people don't own that. And lots of people aren't confident enough in what they say to do what I do all the time, which is Everything I say that comes out of my mouth, I'm comfortable you fact-checking. Every single thing. No matter if I'm presenting a fact or I'm presenting an analysis based on facts, I'm perfectly comfortable with you fact-checking everything I say. You may disagree with where I stand on an issue. You may disagree with my position based on the facts that are presented, but I am comfortable with you looking up the facts that I'm either presenting or using as the basis of my opinion. I'm comfortable you fact-checking. Now, not any other host. I'm not aware of any other host except for Todd Herman who would take the exact same position, which is we're comfortable with you fact-checking us. Lots of others aren't, and they take advantage of the fact that you're not checking in on what it is they're saying. So this is also a reminder to you to fact-check absolutely everything. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. 1-800-465-8770 is the number better tax resolution hotline.